This weekend starts right after this.
When you talk to a Dell Technologies advisor, they're focused on you. They are real people ready to give real advice on everything from laptops to the cloud. And they offer tailored solutions powered by the Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Dell advisors listen so you know that your small business needs have been met. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Protection on campus. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour. With the coronavirus rippling through America's colleges as students return, the rules and restrictions are taking a mental toll, we'll explain. Also, the pandemic has left many people at or near retirement age out of work. Hear their struggles and how they cope. On the tech front, what if your Zoom call begins to get unreliable? We'll have a look at alternatives for video chats. And tales from the trail, as new campers inspired by the pandemic encounter unforeseen obstacles.
People are complaining a little bit about campgrounds being overcrowded, but you know, all sorts of sites like Hip Camp, which is sort of an Airbnb for campsites, they are reporting at 3 times more bookings this summer compared to last.
Rachel Wolf at the Wall Street Journal on experiences of rookie campers and hikers. This portion of the program is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. Contactless shopping and the elimination of free samples. Less browsing and product discovery, and more focus on the expediency of repurchasing. These are the ways the novel coronavirus has changed how Americans buy groceries. The pandemic has altered what products people purchase, when and where, who is buying them, and how much time is devoted to the endeavor itself. It's a story by Laura Riley, business of food reporter for The Washington Post. Laura, what have you noticed?
Well, obviously, we all notice differences. You know, March, April, when we were hoarding and, you know, hysterical, we noticed we pivoted to contactless shopping, no sample stations, no salad bars. I mean, there were a lot of obvious changes in the grocery store. And I kind of started thinking, well, how's it going to shake out? You know, at whatever this new normal is, what's it going to look like at the grocery store? And there's a lot of interesting stuff going on. For instance, we are shopping less frequently, spending more per visit, and spending less time. So there's a lot less serendipity, a lot less browsing. People go in with a list. Men say that they're shopping a lot more than they were pre-pandemic, which is interesting, and men have different shopping habits. And, you know, not to overgeneralize, but they tended to not meander as much, not read the back of the labels as much. They kind of get in, get out. And
guilty as
because
charged.
Of that, well, you know, and because of that, it's changed some of the thought processes for some of the big companies. So during, you know, the early days of the pandemic, March, April, let's talk about, you know, General Mills, ConAgra, Kellogg's, all those big companies, their goal was to get their top sellers stocked, you know, the kind of flagship brands, ramp up production of those, maybe drop off production of second tier products or kind of, you know, spins on major cereal brands, that kind of thing, just so that they could get that stuff in the store. Well, so we're definitely seeing pre-pandemic, we were already starting to see a little bit of a contraction in terms of sugary sodas and juices, but it has really squeezed the center aisles of the grocery store, the shelf-stable packaged goods. A lot of those have pivoted to online. So, you know, you see people buying their pet food or paper products or coffee or whatever with an automatic renewal or a subscription base, those kinds of things. So we're seeing a little bit of contraction at the grocery store in those center aisles. On-the-go bar, so most, you know, with remote work, we're eating a lot less, you know, granola bar type stuff. And issues like sustainability and environmentally friendly foods, that has become less of a focus for us. I think, you know, we've got a bigger fish to fry, and somehow those, you know, we're interested in probiotics and things that are going to keep us healthier, but maybe not as interested in the environment as we were maybe 6 months ago. So some of those things have contracted a bit.
Explain why there are fewer choices. Somebody in your story said it's Soviet-ish. I thought, wow, that's a big explanation there.
Absolutely. So one of the experts I talked to said, you know, with this shift towards online shopping, which they anticipate is going to be permanent, that it was kind of in its infancy a couple of years ago and has just ballooned because of the pandemic and it's not going to go back. So when you shop online, it's more like spearfishing. You know, you key in Heinz ketchup. You're not browsing a category. So in-store shopping is more like net fishing. You know, you cast in, oh, we look at this. Let's look at this other ketchup over here. Ooh, I haven't seen this before. So it's a different kind of shopping. And also online, it's much, much easier to target market specifically to you. You know, if you buy, you know, gummy worms and Cheetos online, you are going to be pitched products like that, either those identical products or things that are in those categories. So if you have incredibly healthy dining habits, those are going to be reinforced by what is pitched to you, marketed to you specifically. And unfortunately, the inverse is also true. So if you've leaned really heavily towards, you know, comfort foods and shelf-stable kind of processed foods, you will be targeted with ads for those products more frequently online. You know, I mean, in the grocery store, it's a little bit of an anonymous thing. You know, you walk through the aisles, no one knows, especially if you pay cash, no one knows precisely what you've bought or precisely what you like. Whereas online, you know, with AI and kind of machine learning, they can find out exactly what you want and kind of pitch you things before you even want them. So, you know, if you say, you know, you like Gatorade, it will be an avalanche of, you know, sports drinks and ancillary things like that.
Thanks, Laura. Laura Riley, reporter at The Washington Post. 13 minutes after the hour on This Weekend.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and proven adaptability are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
When you talk to a Dell Technologies advisor, they're focused on you. They are real people, ready to give real advice on everything from laptops to the cloud. And they offer tailored solutions powered by the Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Dell advisors listen so you know that your small business needs have been met. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Well, we're not even to Labor Day yet, and already COVID-19 is causing big problems on college campuses. Some schools that tried to conduct in-person classes at the outset have already switched to online instruction due to coronavirus outbreaks. Are students paying a mental toll? We're joined now by Lee Richardson, licensed professional counselor and founder of the Brain Performance Center in Dallas. Lee, what are you hearing from students?
Well, you know, I'm hearing a lot of different things. I have a client that is just starting, and her concern is she's not like, I wear my mask all the time, so do my friends. What people are seeing on the news is, you know, is not really the truth. But then I have clients that do see the parties that go on outside their dorm windows, and they're terrified of it. And, you know, when you think about it, going to college is a stressful time anyway. I think 68% of the people going to college move away from home. There's some separation anxiety just with that. You put something like this on top of that and the stress level, it just gets to be nerve-wracking.
I'm almost at a loss to offer guidance to my own son who's away. What is he supposed to do? Not be social? Just stay in his off-campus apartment? We're social creatures. I'd be hypocritical. I'd be going out. I know I would.
Well, we need that. We need that interaction. And what I'm telling my clients is focus on what you can control. You can wear your mask. You can social distance. Those are things that you can control. Don't focus on what's out of your control. Don't focus on, is there going to be a second wave of it? You know, use some positive psychology. Research shows that every day we have three times more positive events than we do negative events. But what do we remember? Yeah. Our brain remembers the one negative. So we have to pay attention to the positive that's going on. And I'll say, you know, at the end of the day, stop and just think of three positive things that have happened. They're not huge. They're small things. Oh, that guy that was driving let me go in front of him. Or that was such a nice email. You know, look for the little things because it's the little things that count.
We're speaking with Lee Richardson. She's the founder of the Brain Performance Center in Dallas. She's a licensed professional counselor. We're talking about protecting the mental health of college students during the pandemic. It has to be almost a double shock for some of these young adults because they knew going in that things were going to be different. And then for some of them, they arrive on campus and less than a week or 10 days later, they're already having to pivot again, saying, well, so much for in-person classes. There was a party and we've got 500 positive COVID tests. So now we're all online.
Well, and I think, you know, there's a huge, they feel like their trust has been messed with. You know, you told me it was okay to come back to school. And the school should, this is the way their mind works. The school has a responsibility to be responsible for their health, their physical and their mental health. And the with what's going on today, it's really almost out of control for all of us. We're all doing the best that we can. We're in this together is what we have to remember.
Right. Do you see mental health as a growing issue or one that has been accelerated, say, by the return of kids to college campuses?
Absolutely, I do. Just going back to just going away to that school, you can have some separation anxiety. You're in a totally new environment. Maybe you don't sleep so well there. You know, maybe you have a hard time paying concentration with your when you're in a room with somebody else. Those are things that transition to that new environment can be a stressful experience. And think about it. You know, at the age of 19 to 20 years old, that's when they're searching for their self-identity and they're going through a really sensitive time and you put some mental health issues on it and that makes them feel even lost, more overwhelmed, and more unsure.
Yeah. Are campuses equipped to handle this in your experience?
I think some are to a bigger degree than others. I think that I'm sure most of them have made a genuine effort to be sure that they are. But you know, you have to, when you stop and you look about that, think about that, there are certain populations like the Black Americans and people of color, they've experienced higher rates. So those schools are under a whole different umbrella of stress.
Thanks, Lee. Lee Richardson, founder of the Brain Performance Center in Dallas. 21 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. Coming up next, the struggle for some boomers right now. Glad you could spend part of your Labor Day weekend with us. The pandemic has left many people at or near retirement age out of work and unexpectedly living on tight budgets. They're cutting their high-speed internet and life insurance premiums. Frills like subscriptions are gone. In fact, a study by the Transamerica Center for Retirement Studies finds about 58% of baby boomers saw their jobs negatively affected by COVID-19. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
The pandemic has obviously hurt a lot of people. One group that's particularly suffering, though, baby boomers. As Claire Ansbury of the Wall Street Journal tells us, many people near retirement age are out of work and living on a shoestring budget. Claire, why is this group been hit so hard?
This is a group that, I mean, once they reach that age, there's layoffs all over the economy. But when you're that age, it's really hard to get another job. As one guy said, look, I'm 57, you know, who's going to hire me? The other issue is that, you know, COVID has the older population and older workers are more vulnerable to COVID. So there's some angst about returning to work. And more than half of older workers are in jobs where they can't work remotely. So you have the age factor, you have the fear of COVID, and you also have the economy. There's not a lot of jobs.
What kind of jobs might they be able to do from home? Or do they just have to look for something part-time?
They can consult if that's available. One guy that I talked to is working, and he's on a contract basis, and he's working from home, and he's planning ahead, looking a lot of what-if scenarios, saying, okay, I've got work now, but he doesn't think the economy is going to have a U-shaped rebound. So he has to think, okay, I have contracts now, but what's going to happen if those contracts dry up? So it would be being able to work from home if they're in those jobs. But even, you know, companies are going to be looking at belt tightening. So even the jobs we're working, even those jobs that are being done remote, who knows what they're going to be.
Claire, your story also points out that some of these people are not yet eligible for programs like Social Security, and some may not want to tap their 401ks or shouldn't really.
Right. You know, you can start collecting Social Security in the U.S. if you're 62, but most advisors caution against that because there's going to be a penalty if you withdraw early. The range that they suggest, if you can work up till 67 or even 70 to do that, because then you'll be able to collect more Social Security. So people haven't reached that age, and they don't want to tap their nest egg. You start tapping it now, and if you're blessed with longevity, you might run out of that money.
We're speaking with Claire Ansbury of the Wall Street Journal. Claire, do these folks have retirement savings?
Some of them do, but not everybody does. There's something like 13% of non-retired six-year-olds don't have any retirement savings. And, you know, there's also less than half of working Americans who are over the age of 60 feel that their retirement savings are on track. So there's a lot of insecurity about retirement savings.
I know you talk to a lot of folks for your story. What are they doing to cut their budgets?
Well, some of them, for the first time, are actually making a budget, like writing things down. They kind of figured things in their head, and, you know, everything was fine. But now some of them are doing a very detailed monthly income and expense budget. They're assigning dollars to specific categories like food, utilities, just to make sure they have enough for those essential things. And they're doing a lot of cutting of discretionary items like gym membership. One couple was cutting their internet speed because the high internet speed was more expensive. They're cutting subscriptions to clubs. They're looking at their life insurance and seeing if they feel like they have too much coverage and it's too expensive. Those who have to make bigger cuts or are just really unsure about things are selling their homes and moving to places with lower property taxes.
Wall Street Journal reporter Claire Ansbury with this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Coming up this half hour, an alternative to Zoom calls, plus avoiding panicky investment moves, stories from camping rookies during the pandemic, and how a laid-off New Jersey man is making generous use of his time. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. The popular Zoom video meeting app went out recently on the first day of school for many people, and users freaked out. With stay-at-home remote work and learning the new norm now during this pandemic, what were people supposed to do? Jefferson Graham at USA Today took a look at Plan B options to Zoom. Jeff, what did you find?
So the one that is putting the most heat on Zoom is Google Meet, which sort of Google was initially hoping that people would pay for, and then when the pandemic came up, they let people have it for free. And it's bare bones compared to Zoom. It will connect you, but it's got some of the Google craziness. The thing that drove me insane was that you can have your meeting captioned, basically meaning you could have a transcript of our call right now, which is fantastic. I would love it. You would love it.
Yeah.
And then you say, okay, Google, can I download it? Can I download the transcript? They said, no, you can't do that.
Why?
I said, well, no reason. Well, hey, could I use your transcript feature as a translation feature so that if I was talking to somebody from another country, that they could understand what I was saying? No. So you can't do that yet. Jeez. This is Google that is the king of translation app. Yeah. I mean, everybody loves their translation app. So that drove me nuts. And there's also a lot of features they say are coming soon. Meet is free through September 30th. And then it'll still have a free version, but they're going to be pushing people to do the paid version. The other one that's up in the top 10 is Microsoft Teams, which really is an app aimed at businesses to have communication among their workers. You can do video meetings there. You can also do meetings with people outside the organization, but it's glitchy. It's tough. The help section is really hard to understand. Most people that use Teams do it because their company has decided that they have to use Teams.
Okay.
So my favorite of the alternatives, if you're not going to use Zoom, is WebEx. WebEx also has a free version. It's from Cisco. They'll let you talk up to an hour for free. There's a paid version that will try to get you to do more tools, primarily recording your meeting to the cloud. You can record it to your computer. I think it's a really good go-to one from a company that is established. It's there. Cisco, I put my trust in them. And then the other one, of course, is Skype. So Skype is the app that started it all. People were talking to their kids in other countries, and Skype is a little hard to connect to. If I want to connect to you, Gordon, I have to invite you, and then you have to accept my invitation, as opposed to me just saying, "Hey, let's do Skype. Here's the link." And now, that's how it worked before. There is a process where you can send people a link. And I did a test with that on one computer. It was an older computer, and my brother couldn't see me. Newer computer, he could. I think if you're connected to somebody, Skype is fantastic. It's really good audio. But overall, Zoom is just the easiest thing to use.
Right. We're speaking with Jeff Graham, personal technology columnist at USA Today, also host of a podcast called Talking Tech. His piece is called "If Zoom's Out, What About WebEx, Google Meet, or Skype? We tried them all. Here's what we found." All right, so what were some of the other takeaways? Because really, for most people, I guess at this point, we're looking at Plan B with some of these, right? Because
Plan B is you should practice with one of the other ones and have it ready in case it doesn't work. That's what I always do. If Hangouts isn't working, we'll go to Skype. If Skype isn't working, we'll go to FaceTime. You know, you just have your backups be signed in, register, you confirm that it will work, and have it there. Certainly, the schools should have a backup. If you're teaching and the Zoom's not working, you better have a pretty good backup.
Thanks, Jeff. Jefferson Graham, personal technology reporter at USA Today, also host of a podcast called Talking Tech. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. It's pretty clear many investors were badly shaken by the coronavirus crash in February and March, and some made panicky investment decisions that they now regret. How can we do better in the future? Here are steps to take now so you're prepared for when the economy and the stock market next falter. They're from Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. Jonathan, set this up.
Yeah, it's been an amazing stock market recovery, Gordon. And a lot of people will now look at their portfolios and say, I'm worth just as much as I was at the beginning of the year and maybe even more. It's a remarkable second chance for investors. And I would advise people to take advantage of that second chance. And in particular, think about how you reacted to the coronavirus crash. Were you unnerved? Did you sell? And to really know what you do, don't rely on your memory, because your memory is unreliable. We rewrite our memories all the time. Instead, go back and look at your account statements. Look online at the trades that you made. And if you couldn't bring yourself to buy, and either you sat tight or you sold during the market decline, that's a signal that maybe you're taking more risk than you should, and perhaps the remarkable recovery offers you a chance to lower your portfolio's risk tolerance, so you're better prepared for next time around.
All right, what if we're just 401k holders?
So if you're a 401k holder, let's say you've got your money in a target date retirement fund and you watched that target date retirement fund drop and you really felt queasy about it, perhaps you should buy a target date retirement fund that's a little bit more conservative so that, again, next time the stock market drops, you aren't quite so unnerved.
You said point number two here, get money out of stocks. But you're a guy who likes to buy when things drop. But you're talking about folks who may need that money in 5 years.
Right. I mean, yes. When the stock market drops, my knee-jerk reaction is to buy more stocks and particularly to rebalance my portfolio back to my target percentages. But even somebody like me who has a relatively high tolerance for risk, if I have money I'm going to spend in the next 5 years, I have it nowhere near the stock market. So you should look around today and say, hey, is there anything I've got to pay for in the next 5 years? I plan to buy a house. I got to put the kids through college. I got to pay for the next few years of my retirement. Given where prices are today, this is a great opportunity to get that spending money out of stocks and move it into more conservative investments.
We're speaking with Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. We're talking about prepping for the next bear market. What did you mean when you said invest with conviction?
So one of the reasons that people panic when the market goes down is because they decide they don't really believe in their stock market strategy, whatever it is. Maybe they own a handful of individual stocks, and they owned all the wrong individual stocks, and they got hammered during the market decline. Maybe they invested with some actively managed funds, hoping these actively managed funds were going to save them from the bear market, and of course, that most likely did not happen. And so what I would say is find a strategy that you have great conviction in so that you will stick with your stocks during the next market decline. For me, the strategy that I have the most conviction in is buying total market index funds where I know I'm getting the entire market at very low cost. I know that, of course, those funds are going to go down when the market goes down, but I also know I'm not going to do far worse than the market, and when the market comes roaring back, my funds will come roaring back as well.
How about you said hold your nose and buy treasuries. How come?
Well, you know, today the note is kicking around 0.6-0.7%. It's really hard to recommend the 10-year Treasury note at these sorts of yields, but the fact is, history shows us that when the stock market goes down, Treasuries go up. If you want something that's going to save your portfolio's performance during the next bear market, have a little bit of money in Treasuries. You're not going to make money after inflation and after taxes, but when the stock market next drops, those Treasuries will rise in value. It'll make you feel better about your portfolio's performance, and if you need cash from your portfolio, it'll give you something to sell.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Coming up next, stories from rookie campers.
When it comes to mobility, Michigan is making what the rest of the world hasn't even thought of yet. Our state is home to two world-class autonomous vehicle testing sites, and we're first in the U.S. for mobility-related patents. With over 500 miles of roadway equipped for connected vehicle testing, it's no wonder that everyone is moving to where it all started. So if you're ready to move into the future with your mobility business, see how we can help at planetm.com/pure-opportunity.
When you talk to a Dell Technologies advisor, they're focused on you. They are real people, ready to give real advice on everything from laptops to the cloud. And they offer tailored solutions powered by the Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Dell advisors listen so you know that your small business needs have been met. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Are you planning fall getaways? Or those whose wilderness resumes are limited to stints as, say, childhood rock collectors or spectators of the TV show Survivor, the great outdoors is now one of the few viable vacation options. Suddenly, bears, bugs, and bad sleep are no longer big enough drawbacks to outweigh the chance to leave home. But camping newbies always have funny stories to tell, after the fact, of course. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter Rachel Wolf. Rachel, what are we seeing?
We've seen a ton of people who had never been camping before suddenly taking to the great outdoors, myself included. But it's, you know, I mean, people are complaining a little bit about campgrounds being overcrowded. But, you know, all sorts of sites like Hip Camp, which is sort of an Airbnb for campsites, they are reporting at 3 times more bookings this summer compared to last. All Trails has also seen their app usage up 3 times. All Trails is hiking maps. Pitch Up, another site that's sort of like Hip Camp, has seen a similar surge. The national parks themselves have seen way more traffic than usual. So it's very much the case that while, you know, vacation destinations are being pretty hard hit by the pandemic, a couple destinations, specifically the outdoors itself, are seeing a ton of visitors.
Wow. All right. So you had some really funny stories of first-time campers. Let's say you knew one at the Wall Street Journal who may have gone camping for the first time. What would that reporter tell as a story?
If I knew a camper who had gone camping for the first time, that, you know, that Wall Street Journal reporter might talk about how they were woken up one morning after they had set up camp on a farm that did allow campers, and a baby cow, maybe a long-haired Scottish cow, I guess one would call it a calf, woke her up by jumping on top of the tent. It was quite alarming.
Oh my goodness.
Not what you would expect, you know, as a morning wake up call. Roosters when you're on a farm, definitely. Calf jumping as if the tent were, you know, solid.
Really?
I think the calf was as surprised as the reporter.
We're speaking with Rachel Wolf, assistant editor at the Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called The Scariest Part of the Great Outdoors, The Brand New Camper. She's collected some funny stories from first-time campers recently. What else stood out to you as you were kind of collecting people's anecdotes?
Yeah, you know, we heard all sorts of things. We had a story from another first-time camper who decided not to bring her sleeping bag. She was going to be backpacking, and, she was worried about the weight, and then was freezing cold, rainstorms, people not getting their rain flaps up in time. Somebody who brought 18 outfits on a 3-day camping trip. a lot of cases of packing poorly. And then one of my favorites was, yeah, I love the animal encounters. Somebody who left trail mix open in the tent and the door flap open and came back from, you know, just like a short hike, and there was a huge bird inside the tent.
Oh, wow.
That they had to shoo out.
Thanks, Rachel. Rachel Wolf from The Wall Street Journal. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Coming up next, how a laid-off ad exec is making generous use of his time. We'll finish with this. When Brian Schwartz was laid off from his job as a digital ad executive in mid-June, he decided not to let the pandemic get the best of him. CNN says the 39-year-old from Wayne, New Jersey, realized that senior citizens and veterans in his community were fighting greater battles against COVID-19, and he wanted to help. Mr. Schwartz decided a lawn mowing was a socially distanced service that he could provide at no cost to those over the age of 65. And so he launched his free service called I Want to Mow Your Lawn. He even set up a website and Facebook page. He's helped more than a dozen seniors and counting. He does not accept tips, but many have donated to help with the cost of gas or donated toward nonprofits listed on his website. Two neighbors who also lost their jobs during the pandemic have even joined the novice landscaper on his mission. Mr. Schwartz, by the way, says he plans to continue expanding his free lawn mowing services as he figures out his next career move. That'll do it for this hour. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. When you talk to a Dell Technologies advisor, they're focused on you. They are real people ready to give real advice on everything from laptops to the cloud. And they offer tailored solutions powered by the Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Dell advisors listen so you know that your small business needs have been met. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.